You're listening to the Average Joe Geek Show, a podcast covering all things geektastic from Average Joe geeks like you. Coming to you from Denver, Colorado, here's your host, Justin Neal.
And we're live. How's it going, TJ? It's been a while.
It has been a while. How you doing, Justin?
Oh, unmotivated. I know the last time we did a podcast episode, what was that, back in January or February?
It was January. January, right before WandaVision came out, actually.
Oh, was it? It's been that long, huh?
Yeah, it's been that long. It's been a while.
Oh, man, I am really slacking. That is not good.
It's all good. It's all good because now we've got a ton of material.
This is true. But with our little intro there, I think everyone knows what we're going to be talking about in this episode.
Yes.
Which ironically, you know, when we first started doing the Average Joe Geek Show with that first YouTube video was about the Ghostbusters.
Yes, it was. It was about the unfortunate 2016 Ghostbusters that we don't talk about.
Yeah. I'm really glad this new movie kind of, you know, left that one just out of it, out of the whole canon.
Right.
Should we go in with spoiler free or just go straight into spoilers and just give our opinion of the whole movie? I feel like
it's been a couple weeks now. I think spoiler free is, or spoiler heavy is okay. Because if you haven't seen the movie, you shouldn't be listening. You're listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah. So this is your warning. If you haven't seen Ghostbusters Afterlife yet, leave now. You've been warned.
Or proceed to the most adherent parallel plane dimension.
Parallel dimension. Man, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. There were some things I didn't enjoy with it. Mostly, and I know this is a little bit of nitpicking, like with the music, you know, it relied heavily on the first movie's soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the flow didn't really work well in some areas with the old music. In some areas it did. I kind of wished that they'd done more original for this one, for this particular run, a more original composition. And then, of course, the whole love thing between what was
Lucky and Trevor.
Lucky and Trevor was kind of like, do we really need this?
I mean, so that was, I think, like, if I break it, like, if I have to be nitpicky about it, if I really have to say what's one thing you didn't like about it, I mean, I guess the teenage love story would be the part of it that I didn't like. It didn't disrupt the movie. It didn't disrupt the flow of the movie per se. It was just kind of, you know, kind of there, you know. It didn't seem to be super necessary, but
yeah,
you know,
exactly. Cause I felt like the whole thing between the mom and, Mr. Gruberson, like that worked better if you wanted to introduce like a romantic, you know, coupling or whatever. That was the thing that should have been more of the focus on, and not so much the whole teen angst and whatever. I get it. Jason Reitman, you know, known for Juno and you know, those coming of age movies and stuff like that. But the whole, you know, the whole self identity thing with Phoebe was really cool. I like that.
Figuring out who she was and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I'm just trying to get all the nitpicking out of the way. I didn't like the fact that the kid podcast, his name was just podcast, and we didn't really get to know what his real name actually
was. I mean, I thought that
was
kind of funny. I was expecting a name maybe at the end of it, like towards the end of the movie, they would have said his name, you know, whether it be just a slip up or something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, or just a general reveal of like, so what's your real name? You know, when he's sitting there talking to Ray there toward the end. But I mean, again, all the nitpicking aside, I really enjoyed it. Definitely, I would put it at a 8.7 out of 10.
That's about where I had it at too. So let me do my, let me get my nitpicking out of the way before we really break it down. My nitpicking is very similar to yours. Like I said, the teenage love angle. I mean, I guess it's because I'm older and I don't want to sound like a get off my lawn kind of guy, but you know, it just, you know, I was there for the Ghostbusters, you know, I think we all were. I will say this, Finn Wolfhound. I hope I said his last
name. Wolfhard, I think.
Yeah.
I believe.
Wolfhard. Yeah. He is definitely making a name for himself. That kid is definitely up and coming. And the young lady who played Phoebe, McKenna Grace, she is certainly making a name for herself too. She's been on a lot of television shows, from Young Sheldon to little guest roles on CSI.
Oh, she was fantastic in it. She did a great job of really making you, I guess, kind of making you feel like this is a younger Egon Spengler, almost kind of like a female clone.
That's true. I will say this. She sings the song at the end of the movie, actually, that when the credits, if you stayed for the credits, which, you know, we'll get to that, but the credits, she sings the song, A Ghost Never Leaves a Haunted House. That's actually her singing it. So she's a very talented young lady, and I think the future definitely holds bright. But none of that is my nitpicking. Back to my nitpicking. Sorry. Yes, the musical score, it was great to hear at the start of the movie, but then it kind of kept going through the movie, and it's kind of like, oh, like you could have put something else there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we gotta have that new kind of, you know, passing of the torch kind of with the music too, you know?
Yeah, I just, there were just some parts in the movie where it felt, like I said, the flow just didn't seem right. It just felt out of place with the music. Like, it just, I don't know what it was. I'm having trouble trying to find the words to explain it. But if you watch the movie and you really kind of pay attention to it, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like they copied and pasted the music from the first movie into this one.
There were some parts where it sounded a little bit different, but it wasn't much different and stuff.
Oh yeah, you know? It had some of its own original composition, but yeah, it definitely relied heavily on the original soundtrack from the very first movie. And again, I said, in some parts of the movie, I'm just like, man, it just doesn't work. You know, with the pacing of the film. The music just kind of doesn't add up to the pacing, if that makes any sense.
Right. Right. Yeah, no. Other than that, I mean, honestly, I guess if, again, super nitpicky, but I would have loved to see the originals in it for a little bit longer than what they were in it for.
Yeah. Yeah. I do agree with that. Yeah.
I know it wasn't about them. You know, I know that's not who the story was really about. But I would have loved to see the original three in it. And I also would have, and this is personal, I'm being selfish here with this one, but I would have loved to see Rick Moranis, had they been hiding Rick Moranis that whole time, and he just kind of popped out somewhere. I thought that would have been amazing.
Yeah, it would have been really cool.
Because we knew everyone else was in it, but it would have been just a treat to see Rick Moranis.
I agree. And I'm sure they tried courting him to come back as, you know, to do a cameo, but he, you know, after his wife died, he retired. He completely retired and he hasn't been back since.
Well, he is working on the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah. I know he's been doing musical stuff.
He did a commercial for Ryan Reynolds too.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Man, I wonder why they didn't bring him back, or why he didn't want to come back.
Huh. They, you know, you got to remember, though, this was all, this movie filming and production of it was all before, it was almost 2-3 years ago, because we all thought this movie was coming out originally in 2020.
It was supposed to.
It got pushed back.
Yeah.
And then it got pushed back again. And then we ever wondered if it would ever actually come out.
Yeah.
Or if this was going to be like, you know, the Snyder cut. Will we ever see the Reitman cut of Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
But it was well worth the wait. So I don't know if you want to break it down piece by piece, but I have a lot of things that I don't want to go on too many tangents, you know.
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's the whole reason why we're doing this. tangents are fine. But I do agree with you. I would have liked to have seen more of the original cast in action instead of just standing there for what, the last 10 to 15 minutes of the film. Just given
I think maybe it may not even have been that long. It may have been only about five minutes, 10 minutes at max. But
well, can we get to the meat and potatoes of the ending?
I feel like we should save on that part and just kind of start from the beginning and kind of cut through it. I've seen it three times. I know you've only seen it once so far.
I'm actually debating. I was gonna go today. But I might go tomorrow or sometime this week because I got the rest of this week off from work. I might go and watch it by myself while Rochelle's at work, just to see it again.
I will tell you this. I have seen it three times, and before we get to talking about it, all three times the ending has got me, even though I knew it was coming.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't tear up, but damn, did I come close.
Yeah. It was a perfect bow on what was already a great movie.
It was.
So I mean, let's try and break this down from, we won't go, I don't know if you want to go all the way through it, but we can go piece by piece and little highlights through the movie and then get to that big reveal at the end.
Okay.
For the people who have seen it, you'll probably know. I'm just going to, I don't know. You want me to tell you my highlights of the first couple parts and then you go from, we'll go back and forth?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So the movie begins with, you see a panned out shot of a mine and a car driving through it. You don't see the person driving the car. We will come to know who that person eventually is. It's Egon, but not, obviously not Harold Ramis himself. So he's getting chased, obviously, by something demonic. The chase ends up leading into his house, where we see kind of a, would you call that an Easter egg or a throwback to the Dana scene on the,
I would say definitely, yeah, I would say more of a throwback, yeah.
You get those a lot in the movie. That's what this movie relies a lot on. A lot of heavy nostalgia, in my opinion, which is okay. I was okay with it. If that was fan service, Jason Reitman did amazing fan service. I don't know how you feel about all the nostalgia. Obviously, to me, it just hit me every time I seen it.
Back to a little bit of the nitpicking with that. Yeah, I didn't mind it so much. I felt like they relied too heavily on it. Maybe it toned it down just a little bit, but I mean, I didn't really dock it any points because of that. Again, because it was still an original film, even though they were harking back to the old tropes from the first movie. And, but yeah, right. I didn't.
A lot of the same jokes and, you know, similar jokes. Speaking of jokes, there are a ton of good dad jokes and cheesy one-liners from Phoebe in this movie, I think.
Yeah, McKenna Grace did a great job just with that whole, like, nerdy awkwardness. You know, yes. Just really encapsulating, like, what a young Spengler would act like. You know, I'm sitting there watching her performance. I'm like, you know what? I bet Egon was exactly like this when he was a little boy, you know?
Right. We also didn't know. That was a good thing. Did you like the, obviously it wasn't too much of a secret, but do you like how they kept it, how he kept it kind of hidden who they kept it hidden who the grandpa was for a little bit. Obviously, once we saw Janine and we learned, you know, who the dirt farmer was, what they called him in the movie, we knew that he'd be gone.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think we all knew that from the get-go. Obviously, from the trailers, you know, Phoebe going through, you know, and finding his old uniform and seeing the Spangler patch on it. It was curious that she, you know, the mother never really spoke his name out when talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kept it hidden a little bit too long. It's like, no, come on. We all know who it is. But other than that, you know, it bugged me a little bit, but not to the point of where it's like, oh, this movie sucks because of it. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I kind of appreciate actually how they kind of kept it hidden. And she didn't say her last name with her first name until the end of the movie. When she realized that there was nothing to be ashamed of with having that as a last name, or that her dad was not as crazy as he seemed.
Well, and it surprised me that it wasn't Janine who was the mother. Like, I was expecting it to be, oh, they actually ended up hooking up and, you know, that whole thing. Man. But
I thought that was my whole going into that movie. I had bets going on in my head, like a little sports book in my head going, you know, who's the mom?
Well, and I'm kind of curious as to who it is, or did he like do an old, you know, like, you know, lab experiment or something? And
well, he clearly had a mom. He clearly had a wife. The problem is, obviously, we don't know who it was. I have a couple guesses. Obviously, Janine was the first one. That proves to not be super true. But I would like to think in my own head, writing my own story, that I think it's his lab assistant from Ghostbusters 2 when he meets Dana in the lab when he's doing the experiments on the kids and the adults about emotions and stuff. When Dana is talking to him for the first scene, first scene of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. It was an Asian lady, right?
Yeah, I believe she was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think but I know which I, one
like,
you're talking
writing
about.
My own story. That's who I picture. That's what I picture.
Yeah, it could have been a lab assistant or whatever.
Picture the other person having some kind of science background.
Yeah. And I really would have liked to have seen or hear from Ray more about the timeline of when Egon kind of snapped and went on his own, you know, because he got interrupted by the sheriff hanging up on Phoebe as she's talking to him.
Yeah. Let's talk about that scene for a second. I have a few notices about that scene that I've kind of been reading about, and I kind of made my own observances about. When Ray talks about it, it almost sounds like Ghostbusters 2 never happens. Canon wise, like if you listen to him talk about the events and everything leading to where they're, you know, to why Egon left, it sounds like it stops after 1.
Well, it's weird because there were a lot of things that still connected it to the second one. I think Reitman did say that, you know, Ghostbusters 2 is still canon with the Ray's occult, and the toaster is seen in his house. It's the exact same toaster from the first or from Ghostbusters 2.
But they never talk about Vigo or the slime. That's the only thing.
They don't, but the timeline matches up when Gruberson says, you know, yeah, the 80s was like the Walking Dead in New York, and 89 was when the last when Ghostbusters 2 came out. So, I mean, it matches up, you know, from 90s on, nothing happened.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think the other thing that gets me too, and I didn't make too big of a deal about it until the third time I watched it, but the Ecto-1 doesn't have the ghost holding the 2. It doesn't have the 2, which would be technically the last Ecto-1. the last version of the Ecto-1.
Yeah, and there's some, I wouldn't say fan theories, but I know Reitman did talk about that, that, you know, basically after Aegon stole the Ecto-1, took it to Oklahoma, he kind of felt nostalgic to the original design and just reverted it back. Is basically what I got from you know, what he was talking about. So the, Jason has gone on to say that in the sequels, he wants to touch more on some of that.
Right. I would have thought it'd be funny to see a Viggo painting somewhere in the background, or some kind of, maybe even the painting from the end of the movie. I thought that would have been just a funny little nod, just to know that, you know, because the toaster was hidden in it, which I think was a good hide. I did see it the third time. I watched for it. That's when I learned, in between the second and third time I saw the movie, I heard about the toaster. Well, and I did see the toaster.
Yeah, and speaking of, I'm going to backtrack here a little bit. So there was one thing that kind of had me scratching my head, and it didn't make any sense in the movie. Was they talked about that the old firehouse, the old headquarters, got turned into a Starbucks.
Ah, yes.
When clearly, at the very end credit scene, it was, that was not the case.
Mm-hmm. By the way, before, actually, hang on, I'll get to that point. But no, it was not. That was interesting. Do you think that Winston had something to do with that?
I don't know, because, you know, Ray was the one that originally said that.
Right. And Winston is clearly the financial, he's backing everybody, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that was pretty interesting, though. I did catch it. Maybe Ray just assumed, maybe he hadn't been to that. I've never been to New York personally, so I can't speak on this, but maybe he never went by the old firehouse. But you maybe think, after Aegon left, he kind of just stayed on his side of town.
You would think that he would, though. I mean, he was heavily invested in it. I mean, the right. Two brains of the operation were Ray and Aegon. Right. Aegon was just kind of the, you know, womanizing funny man.
Wanted to make money.
Yeah. He was more interested in making money than the actual science and getting laid.
Also, I will say there might have been another small nod to part two, I think, as well, in one of the final scenes. When they're trying to cross the streams and they see the ghost of Aegon, I think there was a funny little line from Peter in there that said, "I had a feeling you would show up today." Yeah. I had a feeling you'd be here.
Well, yeah.
Which is almost a nod to when he was on the World of Psychic with Peter Venkman.
Oh yeah, the World of the Psychic. Yeah.
Yeah.
From
Go, I don't know if that was a funny nod. It was just the way the line was written. To me, I kinda caught it, and I took it as that, and kinda went, you could put two and you could stretch them to put it together, I guess.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more dialogue from Venkman, from Bill Murray's character.
Right. He came in, he did his one-liners, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent with Bill Murray here for a minute.
Uh-oh.
You know, because with, you know, the sequels that are coming up, Ernie Hudson has come out and said that he would like to, you know, return to the franchise as more of a mentor role. And mm-hmm. I love that idea because he is so passionate about the franchise and he loves the franchise.
Ernie Hudson is the man. He is the, I mean, next to Dan, obviously, but Ernie Hudson is the guy who is all the Comic Cons and the other.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Dan Aykroyd, I feel like he's kind of lost his passion for it over the years. And Bill Murray has always been aloof about it. He almost acts like he's embarrassed about it. And it's like, dude, this is like one of the biggest franchises ever made. And you're just going to shy away from it and just kind of reject it. And it's like, it really helped propel his career and made it, you know, made him a household staple.
You're right. And I'm going to kind of go 50-50 on this one with you. I agree and I don't agree at the same time. I also think that I saw them on Jimmy Fallon and Late Night with Seth Meyers when they were doing their publicity for it, when it was Ernie and Dan and Bill.
Yeah.
And to me, in my opinion, it looked like they were rejuvenated. Ernie Hudson doesn't look like he's aged at all.
Well, and
obviously Dan and Bill have a little bit, you know.
And speaking of that, because after the movie was over, we looked it up because we were curious as to who the oldest Ghostbuster is, and it's Ernie Hudson, and he looks amazing for his age compared to the others.
I thought that too. I mean,
I could have swore he was the youngest one.
Well, the 70s weren't good. I mean, the 70s, you know, that group of friends being, you know, the Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and Belushi, and Chevy Chase, and the 70s weren't really good to them. There was a lot of drugs, and I think, you know, you can see the results of those, you know, kind of catching up with all of those people.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, they also are American treasures, and we need to protect them at all costs. But
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Bill Murray. I just think his attitude towards things has just gotten worse over the years.
I think he's always been that way, though, because if you watch some of the back, and I'm sure you have, if you watch some of the behind the scenes stuff of the original Ghostbusters, even Dan Aykroyd didn't know if Bill Murray was actually going to be on the set when he needed to be.
Yeah, which like, is, well, I mean, that's
I
problematic.
I got Bill to do the project, but I don't know if he's going to be here or not.
Yeah, but I mean, that's very unprofessional in my opinion. It's like, dude, you agreed to it. You should commit to it and own up to it.
Yes, and I mean, I agree. And obviously that's time passed. And we all know the reason we never got the third Ghostbusters. Excuse me. Sorry, I got a cough. Excuse me. The reason we never got the third Ghostbusters was because Bill Murray never really wanted to do it. Harold and Dan all had a script. They had it, you know, ideas for it. But Bill Murray never wanted to do it. I think he feels bad for it now. Never, you know, but at the same time, yeah, it is unprofessional from the aspect of, you know, it's hard to work with him sometimes, I guess. I mean, if he wants to defend himself, he's more than welcome to come on the Average Joe Geek Show. We'd love to have Bill Murray on.
Oh, absolutely. I love him as an actor. I love his work. I don't know what it is. It just seems like he's just not interested in the stuff. And that was another thing that kind of, that bums me out about the Afterlife movie, is it completely retcons the video game, which I always kind of considered the video game being the third movie, because it was just such a well done story. It was a well done video game in general.
Yep.
And it was weird because, you know, in the video game, it turns out that it's Evo Shandor who's basically become a god and had killed Gozer and took its place.
Right.
And then
the callbacks there.
Yeah.
The callbacks in that game, also in the movie too, were great. And I know we haven't got there yet, but can we talk about the surprise cameo appearances from people that were in that movie?
Are you talking about the guy who played Evo Shandor?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons.
Jonah Jameson himself.
Yeah, I would have liked to have had more of him. He kind of came and went really quick in that movie.
Yeah, he kind of split, I guess you would say.
Literally. Yeah, he literally split. Yeah, because I would have liked. Oh, yeah. What's her face? Olivia Wilde as Gozer.
Olivia Wilde was Gozer.
Oh, she killed it.
I didn't notice it until the second time around.
Really?
It took me to the second time around. The first time, I just thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. It doesn't look like the old Gozer,
I
but
am.
I didn't even think about it. Like, I didn't even cross my mind. And then I kind of watched it the second time, and I'm like, something about that seems really familiar. And
Yeah.
then that's when I found out who it was.
Well, she has the perfect face for it. Her face structure, bone structure, whatever in her face, she was able to pull off the look from the original actress, in the first movie. It just,
Right.
yeah, it did. They did a really good job. Definitely updated the suit or the costume that Gozer was in.
Right. Let's not. Oh, there's another thing to go off on, in a good way. The visual effects and the practical effects were amazing. They kind of stuck true to the original movie, and then that is because he could have went CG with it and gone full CG and crazy with it,
True.
but he stuck very like right to the basics of what that movie of the original effects and stuff.
Yeah, I mean the majority of the movie was all about uncovering the past, this mystery of who, their grandfather was. I would have liked to have seen more ghosts, and them kind of going after more ghosts. Muncher was a good addition to the franchise. Rochelle at first didn't like him when he first showed up. She's just like, I don't know about this. And then it kind of grew on her after, as the movie went on.
Yeah, I liked Muncher. I missed Slimer, but I understand why Slimer wasn't there. It kind of bugged me a little bit. I did listen to an interview that Jason Reitman gave about why Slimer wasn't in the movie, and I understood it, but it still didn't make it any better that Slimer wasn't there.
I agree. But going back to what you were saying about the CG and the effects and stuff, yeah, they did use quite a bit of CGI for like the mini puffs for the terror dogs, but they also had some animatronic terror dog heads when they did the close-ups, which was nice. The ghost miner at the cafe was all animatronic. So they did try to do as much practical effects as possible, which was nice. It wasn't
Yeah.
as CG heavy as it could have been.
Oh, yeah,
And I do
definitely.
appreciate that from Jason Reitman and in going that direction of like, we'll do CGI and practical effects and mix it up a bit. Similar to like the original Ghostbusters and Jurassic Park was the same way. And I think
Right.
having it half and half like that works so much better than it being 100% complete CGI.
Yeah, no, I
Again, that's
agree
just,
completely.
yeah, that's just my take on it. Well, hell, even the Slimer in the first one was a puppet, a dude in a puppet suit, and they did an overlay or whatever to make him look more like a ghost, like it wasn't 100% CGI.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, that does. That does. I mean, again, it was just another good thing. It was another good, a good job, a golden star for Jason Reitman on that one too. I think the other part to me that we need to talk about too, there is nothing that Paul Rudd can't do.
Oh
That's what I
man.
learned after this movie.
He really made that movie. I'm not, I mean, every
He
time he came
stole. I
on.
think he stole. McKenna Grace was great. And Finn were gr was great, but Paul Rudd stole the movie.
Yeah. The one groaner, there were two groaner moments that I was just kind of like face palming in the movie. I really wish weren't in there. One, when the sheriff says, "Who are you gonna call?" I thought that was a
Oh,
little
they had
lame.
to have that in there. You knew that it was coming at some point.
It was just like, oh, did they really do that? I did not like that. And the whole after Gruberson and the mom gets possessed and they meet up to get it on. And that whole conversation was kind of like, oh, really?
It was just weird. But it was just there.
I like what you've done with your hair. Oh my God, really? I don't know. It was just a little bit like eye roll moments. Like, oh God, come on.
And how amazed his character is with all the ghost busting stuff, from the proton packs to the traps to, you know, Paul Rudd, there literally is nothing that Paul Rudd can't do. I mean, from Ant-Man to a Ghostbuster to almost, Paul Rudd's pretty immortal. I don't think he's ever changed his look. He's just Paul Rudd, and he's amazing. And he solidified it in this movie to me.
No, he really did. I hope he comes back. I hope they bring his character back for any future installments, because he worked perfectly within that world.
I want to see him strap on the proton pack next time, though.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed he didn't get a chance to fire it.
I think he was too, actually. I heard him in an interview say that he was really disappointed he never got to fire the proton pack.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen him strap it on as opposed to Lucky. But I mean, I understand he was still a dog, you know, up until the end of the movie. Like I said, there were some things I didn't like about it, but overall it was a very enjoyable movie. It was a great third installment.
How did you feel about the clearly just there for marketing mini Stay Puffs?
I thought they were a great little comic relief addition too. And I liked the upgrades they did to the equipment. Mainly the PKE meter that turns into a taser.
Yes.
I thought was really cool, really smart. It was a nice little upgrade that I never would have thought of. And when they did it, I was like, oh, that's cool. I wish they would have done more with the death whistle. I was hoping something would come into play, more into play with that.
Yeah, that might be part two. Who knows? That could be or part four, I guess it would be.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Man, it was good seeing the Ecto-1 back in action, though.
Oh, yes, it was.
Oh, Jesus, I love that car.
That kid didn't know how to treat it, though. I felt like I wanted to go in and fix it.
Well, I mean, he didn't know what he had at the time, which I'm just like, how do you not know that this
right?
thing is...
Right, the logo's right there. It's right in front of your face.
Yeah, because he, when they were at the diner and Phoebe was saying, you know, our grandfather was a Ghostbuster, he kind of seemed like he already kind of knew that. And it's like, well, then
right?
why
it's
are you...
literally, it's on the car, like the Cadillac that just pulled up and picked you guys up. It says it right there.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah,
I will say one of my favorite moments in the movie is when you get the original three coming from off camera, and Ray does his whole spiel again, except he adds things like Ducks Unlimited, and he adds all these new things and stuff, and you get the same look from Venkman.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines is when Gozer asks, are you a god? And I love the pause. Like, everything, the cadence about that line, how it was delivered, how he waits for it, and he's got Winston and Venkman looking back at him, like, come on, Ray.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice little throwback to the original, yeah. No, I did like that.
That's one of my favorite lines, because in the original movie, one of my favorite lines is when Winston says, when they're on the building, when someone asks if you're a god, you say yes.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I love that it came back in play.
Yeah, they did a nice job with that. And I loved Winston's reaction to seeing Force Ghost Egon.
Yes.
He's just looking over like, is this fucking happening? Are you really here? Like,
I like the double takes. I think they all do double takes, or is it just one of them?
It's but just Winston, because Phoebe is standing right next to Winston during that whole final battle.
Yeah. And he looks over, and then he looks back, and then he looks back again, like a double take.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I feel like that scene, that was the most real. That scene, it gets me every time. Like, it's weird. Even talking about it, it kind of gets me. I know it's coming, but I feel like it still gets me. That's how good that scene was done.
I mean, I had my hopes that it was going to happen, but I wasn't sure if it would. I'm like, I don't know if they were really going to go through the CGI route and you know, bring him back. And they did, and it looks so good. He looks good with the beard.
Yeah, and they made him, he said, Jason Reitman, I believe, said, one, and I appreciate this too, obviously, I'm sure a lot of people do. He said he would have never done this movie if he didn't get permission from Violet, Harold's daughter. And when she gave the okay, she thought that it was perfectly done, which I think is awesome. It was a perfect send off. It was a good ending to the story, to almost put a bow, unfortunately, and this is the sad part for us. It puts a bow almost on our Ghostbusters. Like, it wrapped up. And I think maybe this is why it hurts so much, why I get it every time, is because it felt like it was the end of those Ghostbusters. Like, we may never see those Ghostbusters again.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that, in the sense of, like, with Indiana Jones, it's getting to the point where these actors...
That's the whole episode. I don't want to talk about that one. That's the whole episode.
We're not going to go down that route. I'm just trying to, that's the best way I can express this.
I understand
this.
Where you're going, though. I see the parallel, though. I do understand.
It's time to let go. You know, Harrison Ford, you know, he needed to let go of, or not like, he was wanting to let go of Han Solo for the longest time. Right. Wasn't the best way to get rid of him, but... You know, it is time to pass the torch. I'm okay with it. If Ernie wants to come back and do Winston as a mentor, and the same with Dan Aykroyd and his character Ray Stans, you know, I'm perfectly fine with it. You know, I think that's a perfect setup to kind of have an original Ghostbuster or two stick on, but not be as prominent in the franchise.
Right. Because just like this movie showed, this is not about it's not about them anymore. It's about the new generation.
Oh, absolutely. And McKenna Grace, Finn Wolfhard, I'm not 100% sold on, but McKenna Grace is going to be, you know, a great addition to the franchise. And it's funny because podcast really encapsulates, he reminds me a lot of Ray.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I could see him kind of carrying that torch. Mr. Gruberson, I don't know where he would fit in with that if he were to come back. I'm not sold on Lucky. I don't know. She was just kind of there, I felt like.
I actually, you know what? I will give you a parallel for Lucky. And I think it's I don't know if you'll agree with me or not. I didn't mind her. I thought she did a really good job. To me, she seemed kind of like the new Venkman. She had the really witty remarks. Whereas Trevor was almost maybe the Winston, you could say, where he didn't really know what was going on. He just knew that he was there.
See, I thought it was the opposite. I thought Trevor was more the Venkman and Lucky was more of the Winston, who was just kind of there, not knowing, like, all right, I guess I'm just going along with this.
Right. I see. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could be, it could go either way. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Cause Trevor was trying to woo her and trying to, you know, be all sly and everything. So I could totally see him being more of the Venkman kind of character.
Right. Completely.
But they don't have to encapsulate, and I just want the listeners to know, they don't need to encapsulate the original Ghostbusters. They should be their own thing. It was just funny how there were a lot of parallels. I mean, obviously Phoebe looks and acts a lot like Egon. Podcast acts a lot like Ray, where he's just kind of the jokes, like the witty tech guy.
Right. I think it's easy to make the parallels. I think it's easy for us to make the parallels. I'm sure other fans made them too. But I think that's the one thing we kind of have to steer away from and try not to do, is to not make the parallels.
Yeah, but it's so damn hard.
It is. It's very hard. So let me ask you this. Now, so you gave it an 8.7. I gave it about an 8.7. Now, obviously, as of late, we've all seen reboots and rebirths of franchises, you know, from Star Wars.
You're not going down the 2016 rabbit hole, are you?
Not necessarily. It's more of a question to you.
That movie shall not be named.
It's not about 2016, trust me. Okay. Where does this movie rank Ghostbusters Afterlife as a reboot to a franchise, going in there with, like, obviously we haven't seen the new Matrix. We haven't, maybe The Force Awakens could be thrown in there as a start to a new franchise or a reboot to the old franchise.
That's a good question. I mean, it's definitely up there. I think it did a better job of rebooting and being a continuation of the franchise than Force Awakens did.
Ooh. Okay. I actually agree with that. That's kind of where I was going. Basically, in not so many words, I was asking if it was better than The Force Awakens. But
I mean, you know, if you look at the two as what they are, as a reboot to the franchises, to their respective franchises, they right. acted similarly, where they hearkened back to a lot of the same plot, the overall plot structure of their, you know, the first movies that they're based off of.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you could draw the parallels. I think the one difference is in Ghostbusters, you can't necessarily go the scene for scene route like you could with The Force Awakens, where you could just say, oh, well, this scene is this scene. It's just done differently. Or, yeah, you know, this scene matches up with this scene. Not saying that there weren't ones in there, because there were. But you can't go through the whole movie and say that. So,
well, and I know there were some critics that were complaining that this is just a fan service movie. And I agree. The fan service was nice. It could have been toned down a little bit to add in more original stuff. Because again, that was part of the problem with Force Awakens, was it harkened back too much to A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, with the overall plot of, oh, we got the plans to this new death machine and it's bigger and we got to destroy it. And yeah, Afterlife is guilty of that as well. You know, it's like, oh, Gozer's come back and now we got to defeat him again.
Right. Yeah, same kind of. I get it. And I think they did the fan service to do this movie, to be able, now that they knew that they could do it, to make the next movie, which maybe won't be as much fan service.
Yeah, because, you know, I have the Tobin Spirit Guide, and it's a, you know, it's a book filled with Ghostbuster spirits and stuff from both the movies and the cartoon, the first two movies and the cartoon series, the real Ghostbusters. And I started rewatching some of the real Ghostbuster episodes on YouTube, and I'm just like, man, there's a plethora of characters that they could either use from already established, or make up new ones that would be just as good.
Right. Why'd we have to go back to Gozer? Yeah, I get it. No, I get that. I understand that.
Well, especially since they already did that in the video game. It's like, you know, hey, we've done the Gozer bit. Let's move on to something new. Let's do something fresh. And I know they're, you know, they're, cautious of it because of what happened with Ghostbusters 2 and the whole Vigo
right
thing. But you know, again, I don't know. There are people who liked Ghostbusters 2. I'm one of them. There are people who hated it.
I don't think I appreciated Ghostbusters 2 until I got older.
Well, I honestly think, and I saw a YouTube video about this, and I'm in full agreement with the person who did it. He had talked about that Ghostbusters 2, the reason it didn't do so well in the box office was the same summer it came out, it was released, it went head-to-head with Batman. And obviously, Batman was the winner that summer.
Right.
So it was just... It was just a terrible release time.
Right.
And I think that's why it commercially doomed the movie.
Yeah.
Personally, if it had come out like 1990 or, you know, earlier or later after Batman had gone through the circuit, it probably would have performed better. I mean, and again, Ghostbusters 2 had its issues. I didn't like the logo. I thought the logo was stupid.
Right.
Like, it's good for like the movie posters and stuff.
Creativity at all.
Yeah, it just like it just didn't need to be in the uniforms or in the car and stuff. Like it would have been great for just the movie poster and the merchandise. Right. But it just even as a kid, I was always like, why did they change it with the two? The ghost holding up the peace sign. Just always kind of threw me off. I'm like, that just didn't work. But again, you know, just my nitpicking.
No,
when it comes
I totally understand. I do. I totally understand. I get that point. But I mean, overall, like you said, there's nothing. I can't say enough good things about how good this movie was. It was worth the wait. And if you haven't seen it, you need to go see it. If you haven't seen it, I hope you didn't listen to this podcast, actually, because now you probably don't want to see it.
Hey, they were warned at the beginning.
That's true. They were.
If you stuck around, that's on you. We gave you guys the heads up. And
that's all on you. That's not on us.
Yeah, I'll put a spoiler alert in the description, too. So anyone who stuck around, it's on you, man.
Right.
Well, yeah, it was just it was well done for what it was. I know it seems like there was a lot of nitpicking in this episode, but God, it was, it was a good addition. It was a good reboot to the franchise. I'm excited to see where they go from here. Obviously they're going back to New York, which I love that.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a good send off for Egon, for Harold. I think Harold would have really appreciated it.
I think he's smiling. He's smiling down on that movie. He saw it premiere night. He, with every crowd that leaves that movie theater, I hope it enthused a new generation of Ghostbusters. Not just us. It reinvigorated us, obviously. And it clearly made up for 2016. Like it made up for 2016 in every sense of the word. And this is the only thing I'll say about it. Again, I'm not being sexist. I love the four actresses that were in it. The problem with that movie was the writing. It always was the writing. The writing was the part that ruined that whole entire movie.
I didn't like the casting at all. I did not. Everything about that movie was just garbage, hot garbage. And I have nothing against female characters. Like I said, I thought McKenna Grace was a much better female character to carry on the Ghostbuster torch than those four.
Right.
Yeah, it was just, oh my God. It was just a piss poor movie. It doesn't deserve the title Ghostbusters, in my opinion. But again,
we don't call it Ghostbusters. We call it the movie that we do not speak of.
Yeah. But I'm glad they kind of washed their hands of that. I mean, Sony really realized that when none of the merchandising was moving.
Well, yeah, that among other problems with it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and again, it wasn't the fans wanted a continuation. We did not want a straight up remake, and that's what they gave us. And it was a dog shit remake.
It was a terrible remake.
You know, you redo the car, you redo the headquarters, you redo the... No, man, all that stuff's so iconic. You can't just wipe it clean as though, yeah, we're starting from scratch.
It never happened.
Yeah, yeah, it just... That right there was a big sticking point for me.
Yeah, we got to be careful. We're heading down that rabbit hole, though.
Yeah. But yeah. Ghostbusters Afterlife.
An amazing picture with fan nostalgia, and it will leave you... it will leave you breathless, I think, at the end. Not necessarily, maybe not breathless, but its last punch of nostalgia that it gives you on the way out the door will stick with you.
Right. I agree. Well, I think that does it for this episode of the Average Joe Geek Show. We are almost at an hour. I know we were talking about only doing a half hour, but I knew that was not going to happen.
That's okay. Hey, we're getting better.
This is true. But until next time, TJ.
Until next time.
And who are you going to call?
Don't cross those streams still. That rule still applies.
That concludes this episode of the Average Joe Geek Show. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to stay up to date on future episode releases and other fun stuff. Until next time, keep calm and geek on.